Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted, the podcast for those who are done performing, done people pleasing, and done living life on autopilot. I'm your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and this is where we create disruptive, unapologetic transformations for those who are ready to exit survival mode and reclaim their power. Every episode is your permission slip to burn the rule book, break the cycle, and finally build a life that feels like yours. So let's disrupt everything that's holding you back and start living life on your own terms. This is your trigger warning. This podcast is raw. It is real, and it doesn't sugarcoat what it means to survive trauma, abuse, mental health battles, or even the aftermath of living in survival mode for too damn long. What you hear on Survival Mode Disrupted includes unfiltered stories, graphic details, and a vulnerable truth that may trigger some of the audience. Please prioritize your emotional safety. If something feels too heavy, pause. Breathe. Come back when you're ready or not at all. Your healing is yours to honor. These episodes are based on lived experience, not therapy sessions or clinical advice. Listening does not replace mental health treatment or constitute a coach-client relationship. If you're in crisis, please seek immediate help from a licensed professional or contact your local emergency services. This space is built with care, but it's also built for truth and built for disruption. Take what you need, leave the rest, and most of all, trust yourself. If this podcast speaks to your soul, you don't have to do this work alone. Feel free to join our free Facebook community for high-achieving women ready to break cycles and heal out loud. Join us at Disrupting Survival Mode on Facebook. Or grab the book that started this movement, Exiting Survival Mode, a raw step-by-step guide to help you identify, release, and rebuild from the survival patterns that have been keeping you stuck. Hello, 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 and welcome back to another episode of Survival Mode Disrupted. This is your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor. And today we have Veronica.
Yes.
Veronica, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hello, everyone. It's a great honor to be here. I'm really pleased that I can share my story with you today. My name is Veronica, and I am a breast cancer coach and therapist, and also breast cancer survivor. So that's where my work actually coming from is. It was inspired by my personal experience.
Okay, I'm definitely going to be looking forward to hearing more about your story. So let's kick it right off. How would you describe survival mode?
So for me, survival mode is actually not always the phase of any trauma or any event that might trigger that survival mode. That is the most, where we feel most emotional, because when I was diagnosed with breast cancer, of course, my life fell apart completely. I was confused. I was overwhelmed. I didn't know what to do. But suddenly, it was like some big power, strength came out of nowhere. And later that day, I looked at my friend and I said, you know what? I am going to heal. I don't know how, but I will. And looking back, that was the start of that survival mode. I was on a mission. I was determined. I was fairly optimistic. I did believe very early on that maybe this happened to me for a reason so that I can later help others. So I was going through treatment. I was going through 5.5 months of chemotherapy. I had a mastectomy with immediate reconstructions, went through radiotherapy. And it was almost a year of my life when I actually felt quite empowered. Of course, there were times when I felt really scared, really worried, when I felt really upset, angry, just why I have to go through this. But most of the time, I was just going through it and then just moving from one thing to another. And it was interesting that when I got to the end of the journey, when things were meant to get easier, where I was going through the last bit of treatment that wasn't as impactful as the previous ones, when I was free of cancer, that was the moment when I completely break down. And I broke down like in tears in hospital. I was really, I didn't even comprehend what was going on. It was so overwhelming. And that's what I classed that was the end of the survival mode, when it actually all clicked. So sometimes when we go through survival mode, I believe that we don't actually feel that like weak. It's more when we actually realize what had just happened.
I agree. Oftentimes, when we are going through things, we can't just autopilot through. And then once we get to the end, it's like this reflection, and you actually are able to analyze how you dealt with the issue at hand. I mean, you've alluded to a bit of your story. Why don't we go into depth? Why don't you tell us your story to and through survival mode?
Like I said, very early on, I realized that maybe it happened to me for a reason. And I'll tell you why. Because before my diagnosis, I was stepping up on the career ladder. I was working in fairly corporate world, in product management, in software development. And I had my like clear career path that I was following. But there was always something that I wanted to do to contribute to this world, but I didn't quite know what and how, because I just didn't feel that my career was that kind of career when I would feel this feeling of satisfaction of helping a large amount of people. And I actually start questioning my life purpose just before I was diagnosed. And I think that's what helped me to realize early on that maybe it happened for a reason. But maybe looking back, it was my defense mechanism of explaining why such a bad thing happened to me. So that gave me really a great source of hope and drive moving forward with that. Originally, my idea was I just write a book. And so I was journaling every step of my journey. I was journaling how I felt. I was journaling what I was doing. So basically, when I the first day when I was diagnosed, and I suddenly felt like I'm gonna be determined and I'm going to work this out one way or another, I didn't know, I didn't have any information, but I somehow knew from probably people talking in past that some people support their cancer journeys with juicing, that there are diets that can influence the way how the body responds to treatments. So I went straight in. So first thing I did was that I was going to order a juicer. And luckily my friend said, well, I've got one that is collecting dust, so you can have it. And I still have it until now, and it's been doing amazing job. And I think that also gave me not only it supported my body with a lot of nutrients, but also it gave me the feeling of being empowered. And because when you're diagnosed with cancer, everything seems outside of your control. And suddenly I could do things to have the journey in control, at least in certain aspects. And that was what I was eating, how I was treating my body, and then the big part of was working with my mind to really stay focused on healing, not on the illness, because I had the whole team of professional focusing on the illness. But I was the one person that needed to always refocus from the fear to close my eyes and see really where I want to be when all the treatments finish. And I also use it throughout the chemotherapy because it was scary, especially the first chemo. I didn't know how I'm gonna be reacting, and it was really scary time. But I used my mind to almost like a program for the chemo to go into where it needs to go, but for least side effects. And I think just focusing my mind on getting through it, I was able to move past each chemo faster than I would if I was just reading about side effects and just digging to the negativity.
I've sat back and watched two of my family members go through cancer treatment, and I would say one did it very positively, and the other, it was actually really difficult to support because of how disruptive their mindset was during the process. And as someone who's sitting on the outside, not really recognizing, like I wouldn't be able to truly understand what it's like to be faced with mortality, even though I've had a near-death experience. But to sit and wait for something to unfold when one of the options in the unfolding or one of the results could be death. And you do your best as someone who supports to offer as much, I don't want to say support again, but I mean, that's it. Offer as much support without interrupting the balance that they tried to create for themselves. And it's difficult, but one of the things that I saw on the outside is that mindset is the most important thing. So can you talk a bit about how you had to shift your thinking in order to get you through your journey?
Yes, of course. I'm sorry to hear about your experience. And obviously, I think we touched also a very important point is about how to support people who are going through cancer journey. And I think you nicely explained that it depends on how the person actually approaches their journey itself. So I think feel like because I was around spiritual and personal development since I was around 18, and I was actively interested into the how the mind body healing methods work before. So I actually graduated from, well, it says graduated, but that's how they call it. I did courses for Silva method, which is about controlling your own mind and stepping into the habit of being able to observe your thoughts and then act upon it. Because I don't think we can completely like change the way how we think. We just can learn to respond to it different ways. And my friend told me when I was diagnosed, it's actually you are the in the best moment in life when you can tackle it the best because you've got all these tools. And I think that was also part of the reason what inspired me to step into the role of the breast cancer coach to help women to actually focus and give them practical tools how to be able to focus on the positive throughout such a negative and traumatic experience. So what helped me was that I had like bi-weekly coach, like group coaching calls with the Silva method instructor. And he was the one who actually gave me the tools and techniques to practice and to really refocus my mind several times per day. Because it's just a bit about creating the habit of doing that, so that we don't sink into the negativity. And also I actually opt out from counseling. That's nothing against counseling at all, but I just felt like I was just running in that problem rather than moving forward and heading where I want to be. And also I had to leave some of the even support groups and cancer Facebook groups, because all I could read all day was how bad side effects everyone has. And you know, there's no question about it. The treatments have side effects that are really challenging. But if we are going to feed our mind with information like this, then it's a problem. And also, I sat to my parents and I said, look, I'm determined to get through this. I will be experimenting with a variety of things. And even if you think it's not a good idea for me to do it, I just need you to say, that's great. Do it. We are supporting you. A lot of times it's about the environment and about the people around us. And what I can see, like the work I'm doing, is that we are not like humans. Not all of us are really good at expressing our emotions and expressing our needs, because we feel somehow that we need to feel guilty to say what we need. And I think that's when it comes to the cancer journey, it is important to really go deep within and identify what it is that I need from others to support me on the journey. And don't be afraid to ask for help, and don't be afraid to actually express what you need, because they are puzzled. They want to help, but they don't know how. And some people just withdraw because they're afraid of the reactions. But when there are clear boundaries and clear idea of what the person actually needs, then that's where everything can come together and the people around you can feel like they can help you and you will feel supported.
I think, it's very similar to a healing journey from trauma. I think the healing journey for cancer, it is being able to lean on the support that's around you, but it's also being able to set boundaries as well, right? Like, you don't want to be micromanaged in the process. You don't want people like hovering, but you do want the support that supports the way that you choose to deal with the situation. And oftentimes, in either healing journey, people have opinions on how you should heal or how you should be emotionally dealing with the events that you find, having to face. How were you able to set those boundaries? How were you able to articulate to your community, to your village, what you needed from them?
Yeah, so like I said, I sat my parents down and I told them straight away. But that was because I've got a very open relationship with my parents, so that was probably the easiest part. I think it was more difficult for them to really sometimes step back when I said, well, I'm doing this and I'm doing that, and they were just watching it. So maybe not in normal circumstances they would react, but because we set these boundaries, they really respected it, and I really deeply appreciate that. But then I had situation like, because I decided to radically change my diet, and I had people worrying that, you know, I will do something that will actually harm me. And it was completely from a place of love, but they didn't quite agree with that. So that was challenging, because obviously these were people who I love and, you know, respect deeply, and I had to move through it. I just had to say that these are the feelings that, you know, sometimes we have to rely on our gut feel. That's why I say to my clients, I don't want you to follow the diet I did follow. I can share what I did, but you need to choose what suits you, obviously with the information in mind that's based on research, and then we already know that might be linked to cancer. So that's definitely something that's good to at least minimize from that diet. But I think it's just to, so for me, it was clear communication. And I did find it uncomfortable. I did find it challenging, but I knew I had to do it. It was that survival mode, it was to preserve myself.
What would you say was the biggest thing that you learned about yourself during that journey?
So the biggest thing was probably, because there were so many learnings, but one of the biggest ones was to be true to myself and do things that it's not about hurting people, but I can't influence how people will react. But I need to follow my heart and I need to follow what makes my soul happy and fulfilled, even though some people around me might not like it. And, some people who are my good friends, for example. But these, because like you said at the beginning, once you face your own mortality, you feel like you can't waste your time. And I feel like all these dreams that we have, like that we will do one day, it's like for me, it's not making them happen that one day, because that one day, I don't know if that one day ever comes. It's about doing what feels right, doing it now.
So how long has it been since you've, are you in remission? Just so you know. And for those who don't know, remission is.
Is that that you discharge and then you clear of cancer? I was going through that journey in 2023, and I was clear of cancer. Well, that was also quite interesting because I was aiming. I wanted to be clear of cancer before the operation because I was so scared of losing the breast that I somehow thought that I would potentially opt out from the operation. But the last scan before the op showed still 2 millimeters of cancer, and I remember I was so disappointed. I felt like a little bit disgraceful because it still was progress, but I just wanted to be clear of cancer. And what was interesting that when they did the operation and they took the tissue out and then sent it to the lab, they actually discovered that on the day of the operation, there was no cancer present in my body at all. So I actually manifested it. But I think that was again reason why I had to go through it all, because then I feel like I can more understand to people I work with and the women I help when I went through all the treatments and I know how it feels. So that was so I was clear of cancer officially when I got to know it was end of September 2023, but still was going through some like after treatment after that.
So you mentioned your diet change. What did that look like?
So first of all, I learned about how the lymphatic system works, our defense mechanism, and because I knew that from the biopsies and from the ultrasounds that the lymph nodes were inflamed, but they didn't look cancerous. I want my lymphatic system to be the strongest ever, so that it can protect my body from the further spread. So I learned a lot about what hinders actually a lymphatic system. So that was one thing, but also like removing toxins from our life, because we sometimes don't realize how many toxins are in our cosmetics. And that's now completely scientifically proved that there are things like parabens and a certain, they call them endocrine disruptors, which are elements that mimic the hormone. So it can drive the hormone-driven breast cancers, looking after that as well. But in terms of the diet, it was that a lot of dairy products can clog the lymphatic system. Then a lot of caffeine, alcohol, and also all ultra-processed food. So I cut back on everything. I actually, at that point, I just didn't know because I didn't have enough information. So I remember from probably day two or three, I literally just ate veg, fruit, and nuts until I discovered what I can actually eat. But I found it actually quite interesting because I explored new recipes, I discovered new types of food. And for me, what I say to people, when you go to the shop and you buy something, read the label. If it sounds like edible things, buy it. If it sounds like, well, I don't know if I've ever would be able to find something like that in the nature, it's probably not so good.
Listen, man, you really sit back and look at those labels. Some of the words you cannot even pronounce. And then you're like, well, why am I putting this in my body? I can't even say it out loud. But it's interesting, right? So I've lived in Bermuda, I've lived in the US, and now I live in England. And the difference in food between the US and England is vast. And you wouldn't think
Right.
so, right? Like I was like, why is the food so different? Well, first of all, we have different laws here in relation to the food. One, for instance, one thing like ketchup that I've eaten my whole life. Ketchup in the US probably has about 40 ingredients. Ketchup in the UK has about 10. And it's the same. It tastes very similar. I would say the ketchup in the UK is less sweet than the ketchup in the US, like by taste. Like if I taste it, I can immediately tell where it came from because it's a lot less additives in the food that we eat in the UK, but it doesn't necessarily mean that the food is overall more healthier. It just they have less ingredients, right? And it's interesting. So oftentimes, like depending on the country that you're living in, you may be consuming food that isn't great for you simply because of the food laws that are in place. And my health changed dramatically moving over here simply because it is less sugar in the products that we eat. And as someone who has sat on the outskirts of someone changing their diet, I know that like removing that those processed sugars out of the diet is key. I know a lot of times cancer patients would go more into an alkaline way of living to help with their healing process. And you may not be a nutritionist, but from your own experience, what are some of the things that people should be looking for in their food to make better choices? Because, I mean, ultimately, we don't want to wait until we have a cancer diagnosis. So, any advice there?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we touched a really good topic because, for example, World Health Organization says that 30 to 50% of cancers can be actually prevented by changing the lifestyle. And for me, this is like a message worth spreading because, like you said, we don't want to wait to actually get sick because then it's very expensive to actually get healthy and in terms of times and money and everything. So yes, another thing, and you mentioned the refined sugar, and I think that's the one of the trickiest ingredients in the whole food. And when you go shopping, the refined sugar can hide behind another 30, 40 different names, like glucose syrup, that syrup, that so many or barley malt. That's just the sugar is everywhere. And what it actually does, because you when you start reading the labels, you actually find like, why is sugar in this? Because when if I would make it this from scratch at home, I wouldn't actually put sugar in it at all. And again, like, talking about the refined sugar, because everybody needs sugars and it's fine when they naturally sourced, but the refined sugar actually is very additive. So when I changed my diet, I had physical symptoms. I felt really dizzy. I felt like I'm gonna literally pass out, and it was the sugar withdrawal. And that made me realize how actually we are just in that loop, and we're not even aware of it. But that sugar drives inflammation that then can lead to not only cancers, but another chronic diseases. It doesn't matter if it's cancer or a different chronic disease. I'd say the first thing to look at is to look at how much refined sugar we actually have. And, I've got a sweet tooth, so for me, it was quite hard. But luckily, I had a friend who was really into like a healthy lifestyles, and she knew so many healthy alternatives of, even cakes and chocolates. That don't contain the refined sugar, but they have some organically sourced another type of, not sweetener, but like sugar type. Again, everything has to be in moderation, but that actually helped me to feel much better, and that was one of the things that I wanted to make my lymphatic system stronger. So the refined sugar is number one. Then it is about the processed food. Try to even pre-make some meals and freeze them is better than go and for the convenience, go for the refined, for the processed food. But the other element, because I went mostly plant-based diet, sometimes have fish, but mostly eat plant-based diet, but it's not for everyone. And I always say, whatever you're buying, dairy, whether you're buying meat or fish, you need to realize that you eat what you eat, ate. So how the animals were treated throughout the process, what they were fed, that's essentially what you eat. So that's why I always say, rather choose quality over quantity when it comes to these products.
And that's an important point too, because I think sometimes we tend to remove that element, right? We don't care about what was going on with the animal prior to it ending up on our plate, but what they went through is essentially what your body's gonna go through if you consume. You know, I'm a person who eats a lot of organic meat simply because, and free range egg, organic eggs and stuff like that, because I mean, these are things that I eat a lot, and if I'm not getting good sourced products, then I'm eating junk essentially, right? And you know, I could remove all the junk food, quote unquote, out of my diet, but if the meat that I'm eating or the eggs that I'm eating are filled with, you know, hormones and all sorts of stuff. I mean, come on. When I was growing up, the chicken weren't that big.
Absolutely.
Now we're eating baby dinosaurs and no one's questioning it. I've never seen chickens so big in my life. And if you see a chicken, I can guarantee you've never seen a chicken with a leg this big. But we live in a world that consumes a lot, which means that a lot of things that we eat are growth-fed or hormone-pumped, genetically modified so they can grow faster or grow bigger. And oftentimes we are really just ignorant to the fact. Like if you go back and have a look at if you
Go
go back
ahead.
and have a look at like the original banana, I don't think it even looks edible with all of the black seeds and stuff that was in it. Or we're now eating seedless watermelon. So where did the seedless watermelon come? If it doesn't have seeds, how can it grow? And we don't question it, right? But all of these changes to keep up with the consumer demand actually puts our health at risk because we're eating products essentially from a lab instead of the land. And then it takes an enormous toll on our bodies. And recently, there's been this huge influx of young people having colon cancer, young people having breast cancer, and any age is susceptible and can be, you know, can get it. But it, like this huge influx, we have to sit back as a society and kind of be like, why? Why is this happening? And what is the common thread? And the common thread is our food.
Yes, I absolutely agree. And of course, that's what you said, the age of people diagnosed with not only cancers, but other chronic diseases actually decreases. So it's younger and younger people getting sick. So it is about what we put in our body. And with the veg and fruit, it's again, it's usually a lot of toxins in it. There are herbicides and pesticides so that the crops protected and we then consume that. So I also someone who prefers organic food, but the most common objection I hear, especially when I talk about prevention, because when someone's already ill, then they willing to do that one more step. But the most common objection I hear is but organic is too expensive. But you can buy like purifiers, you can install them at home, or you can just have like really like pocket size, I call it. And you can just put that in a bowl with the fruit and veg, and it can at least clean some of the residual of the herbicides and pesticides. So, there are, if we want to make changes, I think there are ways how we can actually make it happen.
So usually when I talk about survival mode, we go into this, we talk about, I say there are three phases. There are self-awareness, reprogramming, and then reinvention. And I think when we're talking about survival mode, particularly in relation to health, that reprogramming is key, right? Like you spoke about, how you had to change your mindset. You spoke about how you had to change your food. You spoke about how you had to really ch change your perspective. And I think that is so key. And the reason why we have these conversations, and I bring a large variety of stories to the audiences, because I want them to see that reprogramming element doesn't have to look the same every time. But if we want to change our lives, if we want to change the outcome of our circumstances, we have to be willing to do something different. So, Veronica, thank you so much for this conversation. It's definitely different from ones that I've had before, but I think it's eye-opening to see how, that those phases still are relevant here. Because I mean, even after your diagnosis and your treatment, you stepped into a new person who is now trying to be impactful for others to help people through their journey. And I salute you for that. So tell us a bit more about how we can connect with you and how you work with clients.
So you can find my website at www.lotus-journey.com. We just want to say, what is Lotus Journey? Is Lotus is about transformation, and journey is the healing journey. So that's why what is Lotus-journey.com, and you can find all the information there. And also, so how I work with clients, there are very variety of things that people can do and can connect with me. So first of all, I'm running a free monthly healing circles. You can find it on Eventbrite or on my website, and anyone can attend and as many times as they want. This is my gift to the world, and it's all about, there is no particular structure, but it's all about helping the people who join the call with whatever problem they have and how to actually look at the reprogramming, how to work with mind. And we always do a lovely healing meditation at the end, and we send healing to each other, which is really empowering, really nice. Then I also have online course that covers seven basic elements of the healing journey. So things we touched today, it's the diet, eliminating toxins from life, mind body work, trauma healing, and also something that's quite unusual, that's vision boarding. And that is something that also was a source of hope and motivation throughout the whole journey, thinking this can be it because I've got so many things I want to accomplish in life. And it doesn't have to be, changing career. Not everyone will change career after this journey, but maybe we'll want to spend more time with family, or we'll want to connect with, reconnect with old contacts, whatever that might be, that you actually feel like this is the bucket list, this is the thing I want to do in this life. These are the things that needs to be, even if it's a small vision board. And that's one of the topics I'm covering. And then the importance of community. And I also wrote a book. The book is officially launching in October. However, if you are UK based, you can already order a copy because I've got not, well, I had 100 copies, not, don't have all of them yet. So please get your copy if you want to read more about the story and about how I actually, the things I did and how I approached it, how I felt, and how I reinvented myself. So that's one way of connecting with me. And then I'm doing one-on-one coaching and trauma healing. The trauma healing also can go into things like psychosomatics and potential psychosomatics, roots of the illness or any other struggles in life. And it is, I'm using techniques that actually then helps you integrate new beliefs and new habits past that. So it's not just about the trauma itself, but it's about moving forward, because we have to remember that not only certain traumas could lead to a disbalance in our body that could then lead to some health problems, but also the breast cancer itself is trauma. So it is important to don't forget once we moved past that point when we are on remission to actually heal that traumatic experience emotionally and spiritually. And with my one-on-one work, I work only with just a really fraction of a client. This is for someone who really wants a true transformation. Usually get women who are hyperachievers, like I was, probably because they resonate with me quite a lot, and helping them to navigate through the breast cancer journey as best as possible with the least impact on their life, and to support them throughout the journey, helping them to stay on top of things, organizing things. So it's the practical element, but it is also covering the physical support, emotional, spiritual, and mental support. And that's quite an intensive half year or year program. So that's, yeah, for someone who really wants to go through the transformation, or maybe for someone who is lonely. You know, there are people who don't have anyone. And yeah, I think that's the spectrum of things that how I work with clients.
I love that you deal with trauma. Let me just say this. I love that you deal with trauma as part of your program because, as we now know, trauma lives in our body at a cellular level. And if we're not dealing with that, it can literally change our DNA. So if we aren't dealing with the trauma alongside our healing journey, it's almost like you're leaving this part here to create chaos later on if it's not dealt with, right? So I salute you for implementing that in your program, and then also bringing to awareness that going through a cancer battle is trauma as well, and it's also something that needs to be dealt with. So before we wrap it all up, Veronica, I want you to give us one key takeaway that the audience can action.
So, if the audience, well, actually, no, I think whatever, even if the audience, if we have someone listening who is going through breast cancer or who's got someone with breast cancer, or someone going through completely different traumas or health challenges in life, my key takeaway would be that the diagnosis, the trauma never defines you. You do. And the way to move forward from anything is to really listen to what is in your heart. Disconnect from what the society is telling us, what even the people who left us telling us, but to connect with who you truly are and what you need to heal. Because I believe that we all have the answers within us if we just sit long enough still and listen to what's deep in.
Audience, listen to yourself, listen to your heart, but get to a point where you understand how to tap into that, and it will be life-changing for you. Veronica, thank you so much for your time on Survival Mode. And audience, thank you for catching another episode. And I just want to remind you were not built to break, but you damn sure were not built to just survive. Disrupt the cycle, reclaim your life, and thrive on your own terms. And I will see you next week. Once again, thank you for joining another episode of Survival Mode Disrupted, hosted by the Survival Mode Disruptor, Letitia. You didn't land here by accident. This conversation, it probably cracked something open on purpose. Because survival mode isn't just a phase, it's a pattern, an identity, a prison masked as strength. But here's the truth: you're not broken. You're just unfinished. So if something stirred in you today, don't ignore it. Don't numb it. Move with it. And I want to once again invite you to join Disrupting Survival Mode, the Facebook community where healing is loud and messy and real. I also want to invite you to buy my book, The Survival Mode Exit Plan, because your breakthrough deserves a blueprint. And if you felt seen today, be sure to share this episode with someone who needs to hear it. Like, subscribe, and drop a review. That's how we amplify the voices that need to be heard. And remember, this isn't about fixing yourself. This is about finding yourself again beneath the rubble. Until next time, choose ease, choose power, choose you. This is Survival Mode Disrupted. Let's keep shaking shit up.